I want to take you back today, exactly 50 years ago, to a garage in California to witness the birth of one of the biggest, most innovative companies in history. Can we spot any signs that from these really humble beginnings, the world of technology would be changed by three 20-somethings obsessed with personal computers? Well, Apple hits 50 years today. Its latest valuation is somewhere in the region of $3 trillion. Yeah, you heard me. So how did we get here? And where does Apple go next? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, along with another guy called Ronald Wayne, more on him later, they began it all by building a personal computer in that famous garage in California. That idea, that first build, would go on to define an entire industry. And over the years, Apple has certainly had highs and lows. There were products that changed everything and others that actually didn't land at all. It's hard as it seems to imagine in these days of billions and trillions, there were actually moments where Apple looked like it might not survive. Then came what some people might call a generational run. The iPod totally changed how we listened to music. The iPad changed how we played. The MacBook changed how we worked. And the iPhone? Well, you're probably listening to this on one now, aren't you? Now, the company sits at the top of the market with billions of devices in use and enormous influence, including here in Ireland. So to look back and maybe look forward to, we're joined by tech expert Andy O'Donoghue, who has his own personal links with Apple, which he'll tell us about a little later. Andy, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you, Ciara.
So before we actually get stuck into the makings of this company, it often strikes me when I'm discussing Apple and products around Apple that there's a cultish aspect to it. I'm not one of those, I have to say. I don't get any sense of excitement or joy when I see a brand new launch of an Apple 16 as opposed to an Apple 17. What could it be? But other people do. I appreciate that. Are you one of the people who watch with bated breath for every new product reveal, for every little advancement? And no judgment, by the way, if you are.
I imagine some of my family and friends might think so. It's not so much with bated breath anymore. Having gone through the process of making many of those products, I kind of grew up with them. I still get excited about new products. I get excited about new Apple products, oddly enough, particularly how they feel, the aesthetics, the sticky, smooth feeling that they have is still kind of important to me. I can't describe myself as a fanboy anymore, but the one thing that I do when Apple launch a product that I think is spectacular, Ciara, is I look with admiration. Having seen, and as you mentioned, it's a story of 50 years with ups and downs, precipices along the way, and to look at a new product that's launched that potentially changes the world, you've got to admire that.
Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, right? They first meet back in 1971. They're in California. I want to go to that area first, because why did so much, I suppose, talent and ingenuity seem to concentrate in this particular region at that time? What seemed to draw so many tech wizards there?
It's a really important part of the computer industry and the West Coast, both North and South, actually. Southern California became very important for high-end engineering, which would transform aviation and heavy engineering. Northern California, which is where San Francisco and Silicon Valley are, really important in the software industry, but also the universities they have there continue to dominate in producing, you know, some of the finest engineers and designers in the world. The cultural landscape, say, 1976, when Apple was founded, in a sense, that was kind of like the soil that made Apple possible. By that, I mean that you get high-tech engineering. We had lots of companies there at the time, and Steve Jobs and Woz had already worked for HP and Atari and companies like that. But you had this really remarkable kind of West Coast counterculture. That's really important because there is an element of the misfits, the underdog. In a sense, Apple very cleverly still market on that basis, believe it or not, and hard to imagine now. Part of it was, you know, we had IBM at the time, and IBM the biggest computer company for many years, but that IBM represented kind of a corporate conformity and men in gray suits and only men, no women. And Apple's early identity was very consciously, by Steve Jobs, was defined as a rebel against that machine. And some of your listeners may have come across a book called The Whole Earth Catalog. Stuart Brand published The Whole Earth Catalog, which has popped up in the Apple story over the years. And it is fascinating. I remember Jobs once referred to it as Google in paperback form. The catalog slogan was access to tools, and it promoted the idea that individuals should be empowered to conduct their own education and shape their own environment using technology. And Stuart Brand, the publisher, probably was the first person to put the words personal and computer together in a sentence that made sense to the public. And that kind of cultural shift helped people access tools. It helped engineers buy stuff that they needed to make computers. You had people like Woz. Woz particularly, because Woz was very much of a hacker mentality. He had built some things called blue boxes. And that was like old-fashioned phone hacking. Jobs and Woz famously called some, I think they even called the Vatican at one point using a blue box. But you had this counterculture, revolutionary spirit inspired by many of them hippies who would later become engineers, have kids. And you had that concentration of them in the Silicon Valley area, which is kind of Los Altos and Santa Clara, and right up back up to San Francisco. And that was the mood that was in the air. And that is unquestionably one of the sparks that made Apple possible.
And you mentioned Hewlett-Packard there, which was founded back in 1939, also founded by two guys, Bill Hewlett, Dave Packard, also in a garage in Palo Alto in California, which is now considered the birthplace of Silicon Valley. And I think sometimes when people talk about Apple, we consider them as the inventors of the PC, right? That they are the people who come up with this idea of a personal computer for each and every individual. But PCs were in existence, weren't they, long before these two guys put their PC together?
Yes, they were. You know, we had Hewlett-Packard, obviously. We had IBM, who were making big machines. But I suppose the personal computer industry, as we know it, came later. I mean, I remember IBM famously didn't see the value of making PCs for people, that it would be a very small market. Apple, I suppose, the first product that they created, it wasn't the product that changed the world, but the Apple One was incredibly important in the story because, in a sense, it kind of started their understanding of buying products, assembling them, designing, getting software working. And the Apple One was meant to be kind of a board-based PC. So you would just buy a board and make it work, a little bit like the way that you can buy, you know, PC kits now. But the first reseller of Apple products wanted them boxed. So Apple had to make that famous, I think it was wooden box at the time. So that first PC was incredibly important. But then the year after, I think shortly after, the Apple II arrived. And that was the computer that really did democratize PCs.
Steve Jobs was just 16 years of age. He was actually still in high school when he met Steve Wozniak, who was 21 years of age, and he was already in college. Was he that real nerd, whereas Steve Jobs was more of a visionary, more of a salesperson, more sort of concerned with how you package a product and how you sell a product and the cult around a product? Is that a fair description, do you think, of the two?
Yes, it is in one sense, but it is not to underestimate the importance of Steve Jobs and his role in the design of the products. Yes, Woz is a heavy-duty engineer, still is. He would design the Apple One, the Apple II, one of the most successful mass-produced computers ever. But those initial kind of 10 years that they were together was very, very much focused on him doing the engineering. Whereas you're right, Jobs is often talked about the salesman or the entrepreneur. And he was all of those things. But he was very important in the evolution of cloud computing. Steve Jobs personally used a cloud system very similar to what we use now, something that he had asked Apple engineers to complete and design years before we had access to it. A very senior Apple exec told me once he remembers going in to meet Jobs with a number of products, and either iPod or iPhone, and there were prototypes, he said one thing that Jobs had the ability to do was he knew which one would work, literally by looking, playing, and feeling it. And he selected a design that would ultimately become the design for that product.
And it's always been so known for its design, for that simplicity, for that aesthetic. And that has been quite integral to its success.
Yeah, it has. And even you know, we talked about Apple One was a, you know, rudimentary design. By the Apple II, Apple II was very clever with the clip-off top, something that Apple did for years, of course. Allowing expansion was very important at the time. The reason that it was important was because memory was expensive. So people wanted to buy a more budget computer and you could add your own memory later. Now we don't have that trouble. But you mentioned Apple manufacturing is, I mean, Apple in a sense perfected manufacturing some decades ago and have just made it better and better. But we talk about the aesthetic and the simplicity. That is not an accident. That is very much by design and brilliantly done. They are famous for what's called this sticky smooth feel to their phones and particularly to their laptops, the MacBooks and MacBook Airs. And they use a process of bead blasting to create this surface that feels, in a way, it almost feels like skin, which is why people love the aesthetic and the tactility of Apple products. Was Jobs important in that? Yes. Did Johnny Ive, who he would subsequently hire on his return, even more important? Probably so. But design has always been at the heart of it. And Steve Jobs was really, really involved in the design of Apple products.
Now, I'm conscious at the outset that we also mentioned a third individual, Ronald Wayne. He is the often forgotten third co-founder of Apple. And his story is surely one of the biggest what-ifs in tech history, if not business history.
It is. And he was friendly with the two Steves at the time. A lot older. He was 20 years older than Jobs. Went on to have a career in the computer industry, but he was a co-founder of Apple.
He drafted the company's first logo.
He did. You know, it's in one sense, it's a terrible story, but it is the story of entrepreneurial businesses. I mean, he literally stayed, I mean, I think 2 weeks, he was an Apple shareholder. He sold them their shares for $800 because he was kind of stuck for money. $800 was probably, you know, it was a lot of money in the mid-1970s. And he also, I think he was a bit older and he probably looked at Jobs and Wozniak and thought, oh, I'm not sure this is going to work. And so that was his exit from Apple.
I find that I the more I read it, the more I thought, oh my Lord, I don't know how I'd live without my entire life. You had a 10% stake in a company, you sold it for $800. That stake would be worth obviously hundreds of billions today. I understand that he was more risk averse. He was more worried about personal financial liability, unlike the others. He had assets that he knew creditors would be able to go after if the company failed. So it was really just his age and his circumstance that almost went against him, that made him, I suppose, a little bit more cautious, whereas the others had that fabulous freedom that comes with youth and in some ways a lack of responsibilities.
Absolutely. And that's the answer. And as you say, I mean, him being 20 years older is important. He had commitments. He needed money to do stuff. Mid-1970s in California, you know, it's not the state it is today. It's like we said, he had grown perhaps out of that counterculture mentality. But someone who's never mentioned, a guy called Mike Markula, A.C. Markula. Mike Markula was Apple's original angel investor. He was the first chairman. He was actually second CEO. Somebody who no one ever mentions. Mike Markula was a marketing genius, helped Steve Jobs enormously in developing his own skill for pitching Apple to the public. And Mike Markula would remain on the Apple board for years. And I remember him flying into Cork even in the 1990s, still on the board.
They get up to the Apple II. It's well received. Then what happens?
The Apple I, first single board computer kit sold, selling at the bike shop. Apple wanted to sell it for $500, make 30% margin, which is how it ended up with this weird price of 666.66. Following year, early in the spring, Apple II arrives. 1980, Apple opened a plant in Cork with 60 staff. Probably was intended to be in Dublin, but did move to Cork. Same year, Apple IPOs. So December 1980, Apple becomes a public company and generated about $100 million in capital at the time. Things went reasonably well. They opened European distribution in Zeist in Holland. They went through, the Lisa was launched, a lot of money spent on the Lisa. The Lisa kind of looked like the Apple desktop Macintosh. It was wider, had a floppy disk, had a mouse. A lot of work had been done back in Silicon Valley by Xerox on user interfaces and mice technology. And so Apple really wanted to bring the mouse to the desktop. They believed it was the future of computing. So pointing rather than typing. And so you had those years where Apple did very well at times, but began to spend a lot of money on research and development, which they still do, but it didn't pay because the Lisa was incredibly expensive in the market at the time. And then the Macintosh, when it launched in 1984, and some of your listeners may remember the incredible Super Bowl commercial, which was Apple only paid for once and yet was shown all around the world. It was the play on George Orwell's 1984.
On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
Great story, but the Mac didn't sell. So after that January launch of the Mac, you had this new kind of graphical user interface, this GUI and a mouse on a mainstream computer. Fantastic. But within a year later, Jobs exits Apple. And so that was really a tumultuous time for the company.
And who could forget Michael Fassbender's famous turn as Steve Jobs, which of course led to his Oscar nomination.
I'm going to sit center court and watch you do it yourself. Then I'm going to order a nice meal with a 55 Margot and sign some autographs.
Jesus Christ.
You want some advice, Pepsi Generation? Don't send Woz out to slap me around the press. Anybody else, you, Markla, Arthur Rock, anyone but Rain Man. Don't manipulate him like that. Whatever you may think, I'm always going to protect him.
Come on, Steve.
Why was he forced out? And do you agree that actually that was the right move for Apple and indeed for Steve Jobs at the time?
I think we would not have the Apple we have today had it not happened. We probably wouldn't have a company, Pixar, would exist in a different format because, of course, Jobs went on to own Pixar for some time during that time. The 1985, it was kind of John Sculley was the former Pepsi exec, was at Apple at the time. And I remember John Sculley been quoted as saying once, there's one CEO at Apple, me and Steve. That didn't work out. Jobs was somewhat erratic at the time. A lot of personal stuff going on in his life. The Macintosh had really low sales. Jobs wanted the board to side with him. They sided with Sculley and he left. But he formed a company called Next. Next created some really expensive computers, although beautiful looking. But they created software that would be Jobs's lever back into Apple. It went on to be run by a guy called Gil Amelio, who was a former semiconductor exec, who had little success at Apple. Things were in bad shape. And Jobs had built Next and was willing to sell it back to Apple. Apple was in such bad shape, Kira, that it probably had cash for about 90 days of existence. It was the edge of bankruptcy. Sun Microsystems came to Ireland, visited Cork, I believe, and, you know, with a view to taking over the Apple factory there. Other buyers were looking at it, but it was really about Sun was the people who were likely to pick up Apple at the time. Jobs engineered an incredible business deal, coming back in as iCEO at the time, that small I, which has become very famous. And with it brought Microsoft. Microsoft invested, I think, less than $150 million for non-voting shares, but committed to making the Microsoft products available on the Mac. Microsoft's Internet Explorer would be the default browser on the Mac. So a lot of things happened, engineered brilliantly by Jobs, but he brought software with him that would become the new Mac operating system and in turn would find its way into powering the iPhone.
When he comes back into the company, you say the foundation was there for the iPod, for the iPhone. Which product do you think mattered more historically to them over the years? The Macintosh, the iPod, or the iPhone? And do you think Apple actually invented any of these categories completely, or did they perfect them after others maybe had taken risks around launching these products?
Well, Apple have always been very good at doing that. And there were MP3 players, there were smartphones or smartish phones from Nokia and Ericsson before the iPhone. There were desktop computers. One thing Apple did invent along the way was they made software and services that fitted things together nicely. When Jobs came back in 1997 and Apple acquired Next, things changed really radically and very quickly. He comes back a completely different person, more mature outlook, more mature in his management style, perhaps. But people like Johnny Ive, the famous industrial designer, started work on the iMac, which was an incredibly important product. Apple Services gets its kind of its godfather, in a sense, County Limerick man called Niall O'Connor. He never worked for Apple in Ireland, but Jobs hired him in Cupertino. He made an incredible difference to how Apple manage information. And the design of the iMac was revolutionary. It was this pod-style screen that came after the multicolored, or Apple used to call them flavors. So you had the iMac initially in blueberry and tangerine and that kind of stuff. People liked them. And you had plug-in internet access. It worked, that people really liked the design. It was something different. They liked that. And then, of course, a couple of years later, you have the iPod launch, 2001. And this gave Apple the most incredible halo effect ever, because Apple then went on, not long after, to launch what we know as kind of the iTunes Store, and changed the music industry in doing so. And so people started buying iPods. Apple went from 1 to 3 million pretty quickly. But by the time the iPhone came out, I think Apple had sold about 100 million iPods. So which of those products is more important? I don't think any, Kira. You had iMac, you had iPod, and then you had iTunes, which tremendous source of revenue, completely changes the music industry. And then, 5 years later, 6 years later, you have the iPhone.
We're in a very different era today with AI, new devices, loads of new competitors. At 50 years of age, what do you think the future looks like for this company? Will it still be able to reinvent the game the way it has in the past, do you think?
I think things are more difficult for such. You know, when you're a really big company worth $3.5 trillion and your sales is 400 odd billion a year, Doing things quickly is not as possible as it once was. You know, compliance and social awareness and context become far more important to your daily operations. How the company is perceived is really important, and we've had our own experience of that in Ireland. And then the challenges that come, you have kind of Apple is what I refer to as old tech, because, founded in the 70s. It's not like a social media company. It operates completely different business model, but also operates, I think, in a completely different business practice. So Apple have stumbled with artificial intelligence. So the kind of Siri 2.0 is much anticipated by people, but it also has to really work. Remarkably, they launched a new laptop recently, low-cost entry MacBook. The Neo gets 5-star reviews, wonderful piece of equipment, and is allowing people access at a lower price.
Andy O'Donoghue, thanks so much for being here on News Talk Daily and being such a fountain of knowledge on Apple and the growth of the company and all of its products.
Thanks, Kira.
Well, that's it from Wednesday's podcast. Thanks so much for listening. And if you are one of those listening to us on an Apple device, and I know many of you are, please be sure to give us a follow. That way you'll find News Talk Daily in your podcast downloads bright and early every morning. Until the next time, from me, Ciara Doherty, goodbye.